All right, thanks for tuning back in. This is Nowhere to Run. This is the second half of our interview with Troy from London. You can visit Troy's MySpace page at myspace.com/soul_inspiration. That's S-O-U-L underscore inspiration. And this is Nowhere to Run. You can visit our site at nowheretorun.podomatic.com or anywhere else you can find the Nowhere to Run podcast. So without any further ado, this is Troy from London and the rest of our crazy conspiracy conversation. Interesting one. Quitting your job, how do you feel about working? How do you get out of the system? Do you even want to? It sounds like you got a pretty good job, but is it holding you down?
You know, financially, things are very, very tough in London. Like, you know, every year, I mean, the gas bills, like gas and electricity, you know, of course, ultimately controlled by the energy cartels, you know, it's almost like Britain's like an experimental place for seeing, you know, how far can they steal off people, you know, by putting the prices up. I think last year the price of gas went up by 45%, which is an astonishing increase. Right. And then we have things called council tax, where for your local borough, which is like the different parts of London, will be split up into administrative boroughs. But I mean, they go up every year and you get less and less for your money. In fact, they even talk about charging you to pick up your rubbish, but that's what you pay your council tax for. In fact, that's probably the only sort of noticeable sort of thing I can actually see from paying council tax that you actually get is getting your rubbish collected. And now, of course, they're talking about putting these chips on all of the bins. I mean, outside the place where I live, we don't actually have these bins because I'm sort of like a, you know, upstairs above somewhere else, blah blah blah. But the so in the mainstream media, I think some boroughs have already got them. They've got these chips on their bins, and what the chips are intended to do is they want to be weighing the rubbish. And I think because they also send out like rubbish inspectors that go around and open up your rubbish bins, and they see if you've got certain kind of things in there, like, you know, if you should be like recycling or whatever. And again, this ties into the whole environmental kind of policing of people. And, you know, it is crazy. Like, you know, I know for a fact that one of my neighbours has seen, you know, people looking through our rubbish. And the obvious contenders for it is that it's council people. Sort of, you know, it's pretty crazy. So, yeah, I mean, year in, year out, I mean, London, I especially noticed over the past couple of years, just getting so expensive. But it's not just London, it's the UK, you know, because people got to pay the same in gas and electricity throughout the UK. I imagine probably out of London, council tax might be a little bit less. But, you know, most people living in London, I guess, rent, you know.
Do you think they're squeezing you to accept the euro? Do you think it's obvious that they're doing that?
I think it's because it's like, you know, at the forefront of one of these places that they're trying to experiment with the global system that they want to put in place. Obviously, right. It's not quite there yet for how, you know, the global system that they want in place, but it's kind of like they're leading towards a more sort of modern version of, well, it's basically, you know, old-style Soviet communism fused with old-style Nazism, or not Nazism purely, but, you know, all forms of fascism, whether it happened to be, you know, the Italian or the Spanish one. You know, it's interesting that Hitler and Mussolini and Franco were all Catholic. Not to knock everyone who's a Catholic, but, you know, they're quite clearly answering to the Vatican themselves by the various Jesuit advisors. But it's kind of going off the point, I guess. But the, yeah, so this blended-in system, where they basically just tax you to death. You know, the old socialist thing, the communist thing of just, you know, stealing from taxes but using it to justify what's for the benefit of all. And, of course, it's not because there's, you know, information come out in the mainstream media even recently because the stuff does seep through to it. I mean, at the moment, they're not able to control everything and you know, it'd be very, very hard to shut out, you know, all forms of dissent. But, of course, they know most people are apathetic anyway, not going to do anything. So I guess they figure, oh, what the hell, to putting out, you know, the truth on some of these matters. But the wealthiest people in the UK just don't pay any income tax whatsoever. I mean, I don't think you have to pay income tax at all. So let's face it, it just goes to the Bank of England. for creating this, you know, money out of thin air for the government to finance their wars, you know, in the Middle East. It's the same system you've got over in the States with the Federal Reserve. No one knows about it over here. You know, there's no sort of no one exposing the Bank of England, but it's exactly the same system. You know, is kind of alluded to in the latter part of that America, Freedom of Fascism, which, you know, is a really good film for anyone who might not have watched it.
Yeah, they tried to make, I know Michael Moore, when he put out his Hillary propaganda piece just not too long ago, sure did paint the picture of the socialized medicine as, you know, the savior of everything, which, you know, I gotta, you know, it sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah, we'll get two sorts of tax. We get the NHS, which, well, national insurance, they call it, which is for the health thing, and, you know, unemployment benefit or whatever, stuff like that. And in the and then you've got your regular income tax.
It does come back to they're working us to death to where we can't think. You know, by devaluing
most,
the currency,
nose to the grindstone. That's what everyone says that I talk about this stuff to. You know, who's just, you know, people who are oblivious to it. They go, oh man, I'm so sort of, you know, they're looking for escapism. They don't want to know what it is that's forcing them to seek the escapism.
Right.
And everyone's got it around the wrong way, you know, because if they did sort of like all focus their attention on the thing that is causing them to seek escapism, they wouldn't need to escape. You know, they could create, you know, the reality that would be, you know, far more beneficial to all of us. And it wouldn't have to come from some imposed system from outside. You know, it could be a truly natural,
I think it's definitely an attack on our spirit in a lot of ways, because, I mean, and I think, you know, honestly, I think that's what all this is. I think that's what fluoride is. I think that it calcifies the pineal gland, which many have shown is, you know, the thing that's being activated when people pray. You know, that's
right.
What's being calcified by the, you know, by fluoride and by, you know, I think that without, by devaluing the currency and forcing a man and a woman now to, you know, ever since the women's liberation movement, if you want to call it whatever they call it, you know, I think that it was by doubling their workforce while cutting the dollar's value.
Doubling the amount of people that they could tax at the same time.
Right, and now they're making it so, and people don't understand because they're getting the same amount in their paycheck every week. In fact, sometimes more. It's like, hey, I'm getting more money, but
it's not like a, you know, even come close to being you know, in the upper reaches of the pay system. But the due to the recent changes in taxation scheme, I'm getting taxed more, so I'm getting less in the money that I personally get each month. You know, and that's crazy. You know, that's, but there you go.
Yeah, they're just wanting to, I guess, like you said, they're wanting to see what the breaking point is so they can standardize it and ship it out to the rest of the, you know, the countries they own, for the most part. I guess I do think it's a big part of, you know, I mean, when they can blame all, they've already effectively done it, but they want to be able to blame it on terrorism so that we will all accept the solution, which will be the world government with the world currency and, you know, everything else. It seems so obvious to me and you, but, you know.
Yeah, also the thing is with the EU thing and with Britain, with wanting to bring Britain in it and with letting all these East European countries into it recently, and of course, you get this huge influx of people from Eastern Europe coming into the UK. Now, I can understand why they want to do it. You know, I have no hatred towards these people. So this is not some kind of, you know, it's not a xenophobic thing at all. But for an absolute fact, yeah, these are people coming from Catholic countries. And it's been reported in the Times recently, like one of the main stories about a month or so ago, that for the first time the Catholic population, well, the first time in centuries, the Catholic population's overtaken that of the Protestant population in the UK. And another story that came out around about the same time, that was also, again, like a main Times story, like a front page thing, was that it had been leaked presumably by someone within the Church of England upper hierarchy, that the bishops of the Church of England had been in discussion with the bishops of the Church of Rome about coming back under the Vatican system. And when you tie this into the fact that that the Pope has been having talks with Putin recently about bringing the Russian Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church closer together, and you also tie it in with what's happening over in the States with official figures of 12 million, but figures quite possibly closer to 20 million of people coming up from Mexico, which is actually a very wealthy nation. It's just that the money doesn't trickle down to the vast bulk of the people, you know, to 97 right. or more percent of the people. So they're kind of like seeking what they think is a better deal, coming up to the States, but dramatically increasing the number of the percentage of the population who would be quite happy to be under a Vatican-led system. So that's happening in the right. States. It's happening in the UK.
Let me ask you this, as far as that counterpart situation goes, do you feel that the general people in the population that don't have any clue, are they being encouraged to hate a particular group or encouraged to...
There's definitely the sort of the whole anti-Islamic thing, you know.
The
dark thing is... Sorry, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, you know, I know that you have like an immigrant. It's a very high immigration population, so I would imagine that would you know double that. But it seems like they're preparing us for at least in America, for whatever reason, for an actual war with them. They're like, you know, they've devalued their currency. It's like they're in a cage and they're poking them with hot prods, getting them mad and telling them they deserve everything, and then releasing them on what they've told them is the land of milk and honey, and then they'll take all our jobs and force us to be so mad at them. The propaganda is that you talk to the average redneck on the street, and it's like, I hate Mexicans so much, you know. It's like, you know, and you know, in some ways they have taken jobs and whatever, but it seems like it's so obviously being propagated on both sides to create a war, and I wonder if there was a counterpart situation to the hate as well as the immigration. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I think the anti-Muslim rhetoric in the UK may not be so much about trying to start up some kind of, you know, warfare on street level between Muslims and non-Muslims so much as justifying these crusades in the Middle East, you know, which from my research is almost certainly a continuation of something that they tried to do 800-900 years ago and weren't able to do. Which is destroy what they consider to be the infidel. And I would say put the Pope in the head of the New World Religion in Jerusalem, at least initially.
Even if
they then discontinue, you know, what we you know, have come to know as the overt sort of papal system. And I think what they're moving towards is these large regions. You know, I mean, Ike used to talk about there being four different regions. I think it was Deagle talking about there being 10 different regions. Whatever the different number is of the different regions. The researcher, Jewish researcher Barry Chamish, from Israel, now lives in Canada, I believe. He asserts that what they want to do in Israel, eventually, is break down the borders. So you've got a big Middle Eastern super block. But this would kind of entail there being complete and utter bloodshed and, you know, rape and murder and whatever, you know, not because that's, you know, an inextricable part of Muslim people's culture. It's not. It's part and parcel of every culture. But because that is part and parcel of what's been manipulated to happen in terms of things, you could say it's been manipulated over thousands of years. Almost certainly, yeah, the religious Jewish people will be annihilated in a second kind of Holocaust, while their elites no doubt leg it off to Europe. You know, so I see a very similar situation to what was happening, 60 odd years ago during World War II. I mean, even though it's, you know, because people always go, oh, well, you know, the Rothschilds couldn't have been involved, you know, because some of them ended up going to the concentration camps. But, I mean, the elites are willing to sacrifice some of their own in the same way that JFK was sacrificed, although he's the US's only Catholic president. You know, as soon as he went against the Vatican system, you know, there was hell to pay. He made a speech in 1960 saying, you know, that this president will in no way be doing what is the order coming from the Pope, you know, and he kind of sealed his fate then and there. And then there was another very famous speech. I mean, you can get both of these on YouTube or what have you, where he was talking about the secret societies and their influence over the media and over people's perception of things, and how we needed to have like an openness when it came to such organisations, because of their disproportionate, you know, and quite malevolent influence over, you know, what should be a running of the country that the people do have unimpeded say in what's going on, and according to the way that the country's been presented and laid out to them, and that they've been led to believe is the way that it runs. But it seems now that this big push for fascism in the States, and a kind of socialist fascism in the UK and Europe, again is very much just like a modern variation on the forms of fascism that were going on in the first half of the 20th century within places like Spain and Germany and Italy, and that the Vatican is indeed, and the Jesuits are the hand behind this at the top, and they're the ones definitely.
Let me interject. What's your definition of fascism, real quick? I know it's so muddy.
Well, I mean, it's that statement of Mussolini's of it being a synthesis between the corporate world, the corporations, and the state.
Okay.
That it should, right. Could almost be more rightly be called corporatism, at least in the modern world, you know, of the past century or so, would be I said, accurate definition of it. You get these people on the board of directors from corporations going into high level politics and back out again, you know, whether it's from Monsanto or Halliburton or, you know,
absolutely
the media even.
Have you seen, I'm sure, probably Alex Jones's look on, what was it, what do they call that?
Terrorstorm or one of the other ones?
No, it was referring to the books, like the how we have the public budget and then the...
The Comprehensive Annual Financial Report.
There it is.
Brilliant.
Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports.
Yeah, when he was talking about the $70 trillion siphoned off the American taxpayer.
And how the system goes everywhere from your local school system all the way up to, you know, federal government, and the people behind every single instance of implementing this system of the fake budget, which pays for itself. Here, it's a cost, and your income and your cost all there, and then you have the siphoned off the 99% of the wealth being directed to, oh, I don't know, I think they call it their pension funds or whatever. Mm. But then they're investing all that money into the corporations, and that's why they move so fluently.
It's all about having this synthetic system that you can't escape from, so that you create tax for everything. So even if you buy your own little bit of land out in the middle of nowhere, you know, they'll give you some ridiculously high tax that you've got to pay for it on some regular basis, whether it's once a month or once a year. You know, once you've got that level of integration, and you just keep increasing it between the corporate world and the state, you know, in terms of administrative government, and the military and intelligence. I mean, a recent story over the past few days focusing on the outsourcing of intelligence work from the CIA, which has surely got to be, you know, much worse than just having it purely within government. As we know, the all these corporations that have been set up to basically siphon off every bit of information that they can from the internet, in order to go to the highest bidder, you know, whether that's to sort of I'm sure it's all part of this database where everything's known about everyone, so that they can sell you whatever they think is what you're most likely to buy, or at least try to target you with that. So it's just, you know, any monies that you get, you know, what might be left after they've stolen it via your taxation and your energy, etc., goes straight back into their system. So it's just like a drone-like system where you've got like the queen bee in the middle and the worker bees on the outside.
And it's a good system for them to be able to, you know, perpetuate their agenda with the people carrying it out only thinking in corporate terms, only thinking in, you know, business terms, having no idea that they're doing anything else. Well, let me get on to some more questions, getting down to the end here. GMO, genetically modified organisms, do you see an alternative explanation for them? Why are they doing this? Is it just a terrible idea? What the hell do you think of that?
Yeah, I think it's to manipulate the DNA of the human race. I think that's a large part of it. It's also to patent, you know, every plant species and probably every animal species on the planet, or at least those that they allow to be grown anymore once they've done their best to eliminate all the others. And again, it's just all part of the total control synthetic system.
I don't think it fits into the depopulation as mold as good as, you know, something like the vaccinations or something like that.
No, I don't think that the GM thing is so much about the depopulation thing, although I guess they could sort of produce ethno-targeted genetically modified plants or animals or whatever. That then could maybe have that kind of effect. I guess it all goes part and parcel with, you know, the more and more intensive research into DNA and having like a global DNA database that, you know, that they could almost like design something to take anything out. Or it could also be in order to breed certain kind of mental characteristics in people. You know, and I think it's also probably why a lot of the elite would probably be far more likely to be eating organic themselves. You know, I think we'd definitely end up with a two-tier sort of food system there. I think they want to completely pollute their own backyard.
Yeah, it seems like it's a death wish in a lot of ways. I mean, there is no going back in a lot. I mean, you watch the movie, we were just talking about Corporation, you watch some of that, and it's like, we have fucked ourselves. There's no going back. There's no hope for anybody, including them. So, you know, but anyway.
A little aside, what I think of it is Fox and Monsanto, because I like to do a little bit of research into the old numerology and different assertions that people make. But it's an interesting one with Fox, F-O-X, F being the sixth letter of the alphabet, O being the 15th, 1 plus 5, 6 again, and X being the 24th letter of the alphabet, 2 plus 4, 6 again. So FOX, 666. Monsanto, if you take the number 666, so if you take the 6 from that and multiply each letter from M-O-N, etc., within Monsanto, with its numerological position within the alphabet, multiply those by 6, again, adds up to 666. And I saw a fascinating little YouTube clip where they drew upon this kind of forms of gematria from different languages. It was like Hebrew, Pythagorean notions of numbers, the Greek, I think they might have had Phoenician, and even had the ASC2 computer kind of system. And the amount of times throughout all these things, W repeatedly came out as being equated with 6. And of course we've got WWW for the World Wide Web, which a few years ago, even before I was interested in any of this stuff or heard of any of it at all, I thought it was interesting that W was the 23rd letter of the alphabet. And again, 2 times 3 is 6. WWW666. But, and then something that I came across via Leo Zagami recently was that, and that I've been able to confirm elsewhere is that W in the Hebrew alphabet is Wow or Vav, and that that the numerological equivalent for its position, again, is 6. So this whole, you know, Kabbalistic numerology definitely equates, you know, the 6 with W in a multitude of languages, both ancient and modern computer-based ones. You know, it's also interesting, the George W. Bush, or W. Bush, with his association with that 6, and that was kind of the drift of this sort of 10-minute clip. And so I got out the calculator and was working it out, thinking, oh, yeah, you know, they could just be kind of blinding us with science or whatever. And despite some of the poor sort of grammar and punctuation throughout the clip, there was definitely some very interesting points, especially if you compare it with your own name and you try to do the same thing, you just don't come up with the same recurrences at all. I just thought I'd throw that in.
Let's see. Well, considering what you know about all this stuff, what, walk us through your eating habits. What do you eat? What can you eat?
Yeah, what can you eat? Yeah, it's a hard one. I mean, a few years ago, again, before I was sort of interested in a lot of stuff that I've been interested in over the past, well, I don't know, shall we say 4 years or so, a couple of years before that, I stopped eating meat. And it's mainly down to the quality of you know, factory farmed meat, basically, and the, you know, the expense to eat organic meat. And I thought, oh, it's just easier cutting it out, really. I ate fish and dairy products, although I've probably, you know, try to steer clear more of the eggs now, and, you know, sort of,
why is that?
Less.
Just
well, I don't know, because they are kind of far closer to meat itself, aren't they? They're sort of like fetuses or whatever, you know, pre-fetuses, whatever, however you want to phrase at whatever stage of their sort of evolution they are. I saw an interesting clip on the YouTube thing where there was a British Hare Krishna guy talking about the Illuminati and demons and stuff like that, and he was saying his assertion was that until we stop eating the products of the blood sacrifice, that he maintains that the violence in the world will not stop. And so he was sort of like, he obviously, you know, wasn't very pro, you know, the dictates of the Old Testament or the Torah or whatever. You know, and I thought it was an interesting kind of point that he had raised. If you bear in mind in terms of, you know, that you are what you eat or whatever, and a humorous story on that front that came out from a New Zealand newspaper that was on the internet, was about vegan sexuals, about people who are vegans only wanting to have sex with other vegans or whatever, and one woman referring to meat eaters as being receptacles for dead animal carcasses. And that was funny, so it was one that I did a repost on. But yeah, I mean, I have tried to sort of drink bottled water, although, you know, sometimes I forget to buy a bottle, you know, some bottled water, and then you just got to drink out the tap. I guess you can buy things that will sort of like filter out some aspects of the water. But from what I know, to get rid of the fluoride, you have to do, I can't remember what it's called, basically when you evaporate all the water and, you know, are able to contain it again. And, you know, I just
that distilling won't
distilling
actually work.
It.
It's reverse osmosis is the only way. I mean,
yeah.
there's other ways, but
yeah.
That's one of the only practical ways.
But if you want to be drinking like hot drinks or whatever, it's kind of hard to avoid the tap water, really.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of say to people who do ask about, you know, what I eat or what I drink or whatever, is you got to kind of balance things out, you know, between the sort of practicalities and what you're actually, you know, able to sort of comfortably do or whatever. So I mean, I've got a hard and fast line about not eating meat. I just do not eat it. Initially, it was because, you know, the quality of the meat over here with the factory farm stuff, just gristly, fatty, horrible chicken and stuff like that. And you just think, it's just not right, really. I don't want to be imbibing that. And also, when I found out about the drugs that would make chickens grow 2 years and 2 months and stuff like that, I thought, well, you know, that's not really the sort of stuff I want to be imbibing into my system. And I guess it just comes down to a very basic, you know, common sense thing or whatever of you are what you eat. Thinking, you know, I don't want to be ingesting this, that, or the other, and being selective about that and finding out a bit more about ingredients. Also, came across this thing. I've not stuck to it rigorously, but I think it's got a lot to commend it. That's the low glycemic index based diet, which is all related to how quickly your body processes or digests certain foods. And the ones that digest too quickly are just not able to provide your body with decent long-term energy or whatever, and you'll get very exhausted very quickly, like an hour or so after eating these high GI diets, whereas the low GI ones, your body's spending time burning up the food, and your processes the energy draws it out in a way that's just kind of far more beneficial to you. And so it's not so much about strictly just looking at stuff like fat or sugar content. There are other aspects to it as well, although those things are obviously kind of important. But I mean, I like stuff like fish and chips. I mean, I had like fish and chips tonight, and a nutritionalist who might be concerned about certain aspects might hold their hands up in horror or whatever. But again, you balance these things out. I mean,
it's scary though. I mean, considering what we are, you go to a grocery store and you can't find but only a few items that you could have found 50 years ago. I mean, it's
also the depletion of the vitamins and minerals, supposedly, is about 70% over the past sort of 50 or so years.
And you think, hey, well, fruits and vegetables, but that's just as dangerous. And I hate to, this is something that I've only recently been amazed by, is that the experimental pesticides, what they're doing, it's not just... I mean, this is all part of the plan, too. I mean, the pesticides are not just to keep bugs off anymore. They're for depopulation. You can't trust anything like that anymore,
Yeah.
I mean, it has to be organic, or you're just doing... You might as well be eating meat, because you're getting more... you're getting the new drugs that they want the population to have just by eating your local fruits and vegetables. And not to mention, we have no idea the initial research on the genetically modified... I know here in Canada... Here's something I want to ask you. In America and in Canada, they don't have to tell us if it's genetically modified or not. And so the best we can do is to kind of guess what they're genetically modifying.
There's a new one coming through as well over there, isn't there? Where something's only got to be 95% organic to be declared organic. So the rest of it could be full of carcinogenic chemicals, and it could still be passed the organic test.
I didn't know that. But do you have labels that say, hey, this is genetically modified on it?
I think they put it in very small letters. But again, a lot of this labeling is not very necessarily rigorously enforced. So, for example, with organic wholemeal bread, I think. I don't know if it's necessarily organic, but definitely like wholemeal bread. There was like some big kind of... big news thing about it that's kind of broken through about some kind of fat stuff ingested in it to pumped into it to make it look kind of puffier and bigger, etc. And so where people were thinking that they're eating this healthy wholemeal bread or whatever instead of processed white bread, in fact were taking into their body this, I can't remember what kind of fat it was now, hydrogenated fat or something like that. And it was talking about, why is it that so many people putting on a hell of a lot of weight despite the fact that they think that they're eating healthy diets? And, it was saying that, you've really got to, brush up on different kinds of products or food produce that's available and be really, really selective and really, up your knowledge on stuff like that. With the organic stuff, I don't buy everything organic because it can be really expensive, but I do definitely try to go for a lot more organic stuff than I would have at one time, that's for sure.
Well, let's see. We're going to wrap up here. I guess I think we almost got about 3 hours worth of material here. I think I'll probably break it up into probably about an hour segments and make it available for you. It's going to be a bit of a situation. I'm doing something a little different, so I'll have it late tonight, but it'll probably be early morning before you'll be able over there before I get it out.
To ask you some questions some other time.
hell, I got time. one thing I wanted to do also was to ask you about your the MySpace page. I'm going to put links to that and everything and what you do. I think it's really interesting what I call the MySpace newswire, which is the bulletin board on MySpace. If you have collected enough truthers, let's say, on your friends list, then the bulletin board becomes a real-time newswire that is more reliable than the AP in a lot of cases.
I mean, like I said earlier, that's why I've had to set up a second one, because even with the second one, I can find it hard to sort of... I mean, obviously, I don't read every bulletin. I just, if something catches my eye or something like that, then I check it out. And sometimes I pick up on some leads from that.
It's kind of like a new genre of independent journalists of these people that post bulletins. It's become literally a new genre, and people become, in effect, more or less, you know, notorious, famous, whatever you want to call it, as being these neo journalists.
I've had to slow up recently on the bulletin sending, because it can be a double-edged sort of thing. Like, you know, in some ways, in order to do really deep kind of research or deeper sort of research anyway, on the rest of the net, you're just not going to have the time to be constantly pumping out all these bulletins. And it amazes me that people do actually have the time to do it. I guess they probably got, you know, if they are working, you know, maybe a few of them aren't, and might have some kind of source of income where they don't need to work or whatever, but it's not the case with myself. But the I guess a lot of people are in office-based situations, which I'm not, so it's not like I get a lot of access during the day, you know, 5 days a week, to be doing that. And what with travel times in London and stuff like that, by the time you get home, you know, have your food or whatever, and then, you know, you get onto the internet, of course, you know, you check your incoming messages, you flip through some of the bulletins or whatever. You know, one of the first things I do is flick through, see if there's any bulletins catch my eye, and if I've got the time, repost those. Some days I do it, some days I don't. Some days I think, no, I just want to watch some documentaries or whatever, look up a whole bunch of the stuff I might have bookmarked previously, and that usually leads you into other places as well. And then, you know, try to have like a different balance of stuff that I might be sending out. Like, I mean, a few days ago, I might have done like a UK police state series of bulletins, which, would be drawing a lot of stuff of just mainstream news, but stuff that's not necessarily on the front page or whatever. But that's it. I mean, mix up your sources. You know, you have mainstream sources, have the alternative sources, have, you know, more alternatives to the alternative sources, and have original sources. I think it's that combination of things. I mean, full respect, full marks to the people who are pumping a lot of stuff out there, a lot of quality information bulletins. I would if I had the time, but I've really realised balance out your time as a commodity. But I mean, stuff like your own interesting times thing that you do, I mean, that's great source of information, you know, because it draws together a whole bunch of the relevant contemporary stories, and you can also go back over the past few weeks or even months and within that and come across other stuff. So, I mean, that's a great source for people and, you know, for them to post up on their pages, so that other people just got to go to your page, check out all this incoming information, and, you know, it's great stuff.
Right, and your page itself is that's what's, you know, what the real wealth is that when you can draw people to your page, and your page is set up so that you're in effect linking people and giving people, you know, a wealth of information. It was one of the first things I was like, oh, you know, this guy's got it figured out, you know, for the most part. And it's so people need that. That's what I was wanting to ask you was, first of all, what is the URL to your MySpace page?
Okay. That's www.myspace.com/soul, as in S-O-U-L, _inspiration. So underscore the symbol. So myspace.com/soul_inspiration.
And there is a lot of information there. You go through the blogs, a lot of the comments of the blogs. It's just information on top of information. But one of my questions was, have you looked into... if not doing a website, doing a blog, which you could in effect do what you do on MySpace, just
add more stuff. Yeah, I know, because my whole blog thing is so blocked up with, I even comment on my own blogs just to get more information in there. And, but I've got to say my computer skills are appalling. Like I set up a site spaces thing recently. I can't even figure out how to get my pictures off my MySpace. Like the display pictures to put on the site spaces. So I've got like a kind of like a blank cartoon character cut out that they just kind of give you before you put your own photos in there. So yeah, I've got to look more into having some kind of blog thing that you can link. It's again, it's the sort of thing like it's addictive finding out, you know, obtaining knowledge from this information that you research. And you can just spend so much time doing it that, you know, stuff like basic computer skills can go out the window. I mean, anything I've actually done with my page has been, you know, almost through, you know, just trial and error experimentation. But I mean, yeah, I don't even know how to take a picture off anywhere on the web and slap it on my page.
I figured that out myself. I just figured that out maybe last week. I should send you the how-to. It's really, really simple, and it would actually probably be you'd be able to get all your stuff off there and onto somewhere that's independent of MySpace, you know, so that it can be searched, you know, and if they shut you down, they haven't in effect shut you down, you know, you can pay for a WordPress blog or something like that, and you can, it's almost needed so that when people start to look for these things and do the Google searches that they find you, you know, because there's just a wealth of information, you know, you just it would be a hell of a thing to do, I think, that way.
Definitely. Like, I would like to have kind of like some outside source to put these blogs, and I mean, a lot of my blogs are just stuff I've taken from elsewhere, but things that I think, well, it's put in such a, you know, informative, great way with some interesting pictures. You know, I wouldn't be able to better it myself. In fact, I'd rather spend my time, you know, researching some of the stuff that's here, and then people can do the same thing by utilizing the same sources or whatever. It's funny. I mean, someone was asking me mentioned today in one of the messages about the sort of uppercase, lowercase, headcase sort of writing, as I call it,
right.
You know, with it's all being staggered. And there is kind of like a method to the madness. I mean, first of all, I thought I just wanted to highlight certain parts of words or words within words or words within sentences or whatever. And then I started experimenting around with the look of things. But one unintended benefit of this in terms of getting the information out that I've found more and more so, sometimes I'll be looking something up on a search engine, entering, you know, two or three or four words, combinations of, to try to get information about, you know, some subject I'm interested in. And, you know, you might have, like, say, 20 entries come up per page or whatever. And quite often, you know, one of my pages, you know, like the MySpace page or whatever, will come up as one of the entries, like, within the first or second page. And I'm like, really surprised by that. And I was thinking, why is that? I'm thinking, well, okay, say it's at 5 or 6 or even 10 pages through, because it's got that kind of weird up and down sort of writing, people click on it. And I think the more people it ended up doing, it kind of gets pushed closer and closer towards the front of search engines.
That's a good point.
And that gets the information out. So it's almost become like a sort of, guerrilla media type tactic for getting the information out, is that people tend to, if they find it on a search engine, they tend to click on it, and it tends to go towards the front of the thing a lot more, and it kind of snowballs.
One thing I would suggest, I'm sure you probably have done this. If not, I would suggest doing it. Just copy and paste all the HTML on your page and save it in a Word document or whatever.
I've got it backed up elsewhere.
Okay, good.
It's
just at the mercy of Rupert.
A good tip for people is to email your profile edit sections to yourself. Although, one thing I've noticed recently is I can't actually make any more changes to my page, or else it goes blank. So MySpace have done something, along with the many other changes that they've made over the past 3 or 4 months, such as replacing all of your links, your URL links for your banner links and things like that, with things that they call MSP links, which sources out to a third party company for filtering, ostensibly for stopping spamming and, you know, porn bots or whatever the hell they're called, and all this, that, and the other. But in actual fact, you know, as they've even admitted in the media themselves, that they use it to stop you connecting with stuff like, you know, the Alex Jones sites, for example, Prison Planet, InfoWars, and I'm sure many, many other things. And that combined with the whole phishing, P-H-I-S-I-N-G thing, where MySpace alert you that you've that someone has hacked into your account. Well, the bizarre thing is, like, from my own personal experience, it's only ever happened repeatedly, again and again and again, when I've tried to send an article on Zionism, which, as I mentioned earlier, is different to Judaism, and in fact is actually anti-Jewish Zionism. But people like Murdoch is Zionist, and Papal Knight of St. Gregory as well. And so I've also had trouble sending certain things on the Jesuits, and also an article that, relating the Jesuits to the John Birch Society, gave me a lot of grief. This does seem to be something in common with a lot of people. And one of my top MySpace friends, a guy called Thomas Richards, he's got a brilliant Jesuit expose website. He's a former Catholic. Called spirituallysmart.com, full of pictures of photo evidence of the Jesuits and the Vatican's influence and control over world leaders, etc. He's had two of his pages deleted over the past couple of weeks. It doesn't seem to be any coincidence there. So I have noticed a definite kind of increase in methods and ways of kind of clamping down on the information.
I always look at it like they're just, it's both MySpace and also in general, the internet has got to be just a double, or maybe not a double-edged sword, but I don't know what I'm looking for, but basically, you know, they hate it and love it at the same time because, well, on MySpace, it's making Rupert so much money. Everybody's on it and you can spy so effectively on people. But on the other hand, it's awakening people. But again, as my view, I don't think awakening is a bad thing. As long as you can continually lead people to their religion, then awakening to 9/11 is a small price to pay and it might as well be propagated by them by every mountaintop out there. But also the internet in the same sense is like, you know, I mean, they hate it and love it because of the spying capabilities and the awakening and stuff. Okay, one thing I meant to ask you, we kind of mentioned it, and I'm really almost done at this point, but...
say as long as you want, man. I'm in no rush, so just do it according to your own needs. I guess you've got stuff you probably need to do yourself, but yeah, take it away.
Now, we were talking about, you were talking about how in Britain, the main news stories of the day, you're talking about the celebrities are, you know, getting arrested and all that stuff is always shoved in your face and everything. Just a quick question. I wanted to ask what celebrities they were and what were the stories that generally happened with them, because I wanted to compare to see if there's any reason that they're doing the exact same thing over there that they are over here, and just what celebrities are they and what are they doing?
At the moment, there's like a journalist, Chris Lamb, I think his name is. He's a journalist, or a TV kind of guy. I don't actually watch TV. I haven't had the TV hooked up to the aerial for the past couple of years at least now. But sometimes I see the TV when it's at work or whatever, and the newspapers, they're always lying around. There was the whole thing of the internet porn thing, I guess, was sort of like the child porn or whatever that he was associated with, and there was various other celebrities going back, like to Pete Townsend of The Who, Gary Glitter, who was like a 70s glam rocker, etc. But the thing is, this really seems to, I mean, it's been going on maybe 4 years now, possibly, I'm not sure the exact date. I mean, I think Gary Glitter was the first big one, but it's almost like they're seeding this idea into the public consciousness that even if they're vilifying the people being arrested, it almost makes it more acceptable or commonplace, or it becomes part of the mainstream humour. And once something's kind of become part of the mainstream humour, it's going to become more acceptable anyway. So you've got to kind of think, what is the intent for this? And also for making anything else acceptable that they may want to make acceptable. I mean, you could look at it from a number of reasons. You could think, well, prisons, maybe even privatizing prisons, you know, is like, it's a big business thing. Like, even in the States, I mean, I think 1 in 32 adults at least is in prison. So there seems to be no limits it to that kind of thing. So any kind of criminal behaviour that they can encourage in people, I think they rub their hands with glee, because like that they can sort of say that this is a terrible thing on one side of it, but at the same side of it, you know, they're not actually doing anything to stop the people who are actually making it available on the net. You know, if they really wanted to stop something, that's what you'd think they'd do.
Rather than
just have something that they can push in the media the whole time, whether it's, you know, celebrities or nobodies, I think it also kind of vilifies use of the internet. And of course, you know, the whole sort of MySpace.com thing, whether it be, you know, any time it's in the media, it's about people using it for predatory purposes or whatever. And of course, this is going to kind of put some people off using it who otherwise might use it, because, you know, anyone doing this Truth Network thing, using it for, you know, guerrilla media, I suppose you might want to call it, you know, there might be some people who haven't got to using MySpace at that stage themselves. But of course, if they're on it all the time, you know, the people reading papers go, oh yeah, so, you know, what reason are you on it all the time for then, you know? Yeah, it's a complex sort of thing, and what you've got to do is, like, it's almost like whenever I see news stories over the past few years, regardless of what they're about, you kind of decode what is the intent of it being there, because you know that they can choose between any number of things. And yeah, I've found over the past few months in particular, you know, they focus on about 7 or 8 different stories, and it's the same ones, just despite the fact that there's no real progress to them, you know, or very little. You know, there's this constant thing that they put out, like Gordon Brown's face, or constant references to Gordon Brown before he became Prime Minister, as in being the next Prime Minister. The little girl who went missing, Maddie, whatever her name is, although there's an interesting headline in one of the papers today, further to what I mentioned to you earlier, which is that they found blood within the hotel room of where she was. So this, you know, it's not saying that the parents were involved at all, but what it is indicating is that there's a far higher possibility that was the case. So all these stories they've been running of her for the past few months, of her being seen in Berlin or wherever the hell it is, and places like that, or Morocco, you think these are just really excuses to see the story on the front page. Why are they doing that? I think it's about the microchip agenda. Microchip your kids. Once you've got kids microchip, well, you know, then they've got it in them for life, basically. Even if they might need, you know, sort of like a, you know, a changeover every now and then if the old one breaks down or something. But you know, like in the States, I mean, there's a Freemasonic website where they're promoting the chipping agenda for kids. And of course, if you go on the Xmark website, VeriChip recently changed the name about 2 weeks ago from VeriChip to Xmark. They are the people who manufacture the microchip that is planned for being embedded in everyone's arm throughout the globe. And China have ordered up millions, if not billions, of these things. I guess it must be millions, because they've only got a population of 1.5 billion over there. A few years ago, there was about 4,000 Americans already had them for trial purposes. So I think quite clearly that, you know, that they use these tactics, you know, sort of like appealing to people's humanitarian sort of impulses or whatever. I mean, no one wants to see, you know, their kids going missing, or anyone else's kids going missing, unless they're, you know, completely mad. But the, you know, they try to appeal to people's heartstrings, and then it's like, oh, well, you don't want to be microchipped, you know, what, you sort of, you think it's all right for them to be kidnapped or something ridiculous, you know? But it's very clever. It's a very, very, very clever system, and it's, you know, the whole...
And it seems like that they're just riding such a fine line and playing such a dangerous game with a lot of it, because, as I said, I think a lot of the, as I said in the, when we were talking earlier, I think that they use a lot of the people that they know that they can control, even on these type news stories. So a lot of the people are multiple personality disorder, you know, under their control overtly. And I think that a lot of the parents, like JonBenet Ramsey, and, you know, all that kind of thing. All the school shooting people of recent days, you know, and in fact, all the celebrities, the Britney and the Anna Nicole and the Lindsay Lohan and all this stuff is, and they're our media's darlings, and we'll report Paris Hilton and she does this and does that and goes to prison and all this stuff. We'll report her every last move because...
It's terrific. I mean, these people that they big up, they just become more and more banal year in, year out. You know, I mean, they truly are incredibly dull.
But I mean, it's just so dangerous because, you know, you have this, I mean, I don't know how sure you are, as I don't know if you're as sure as I am, that most of the people in power have been chosen to rise to power in a lot of cases because they have some pedophilia, you know, tendencies so that they can be blackmailed with, hey, you know, you say anything about anything, we can release all this stuff about you. And in the meantime, feeding the problem addiction,
yeah,
even the
homosexual thing. I mean, like, you know, there seems to be a possibility that Gordon Brown, you know, could be blackmailed over that, and that sort of keeps him in his place or whatever, because he knows that would be, you know, very hurtful to his political career, despite the fact that, you know, they're kind of it's become more popularized within the mainstream. It's still within, you know, the kind of levels of someone being prime minister of the country. You know, I don't think that it's been made acceptable enough for them on that sort of level, you know.
Well, I think it's also because, you know, maybe not so much in just the straight homosexuality, but in the pedophilia, certainly, the kind of person that would do any sort of rape or anything at that level, and then they rise to power, not only can they be blackmailed because of this obvious, you know, problem, but they also are the type of person that can carry out some of the things that must happen in this system. I mean, some of the egregious stuff that goes on, you know, is very you can't have a soul and do some of this stuff, you know. So I think they need them because they can blackmail them, and because that they, by their nature of being somebody that does that, and that's all part of the system that they grew up in their own selves being traumatized, and the trauma-based multiple personality, yeah, satanic ritual abuse system that they grew up in. So it's a perpetual thing. The empire's growing exponentially, and it's just this dark. It's like, I hate to use the comparison, but it's a hell of a lot like the Lord of the Rings in this ominous. This ominous empire growing. It's just this oppressive feeling is getting bigger and stronger with every passing day, and that, you know, it grows because of the more people, like, I hate to use this, I mean, you have to work with me on this one because I know you don't believe as I do for the most part, but like Harry Potter, let's, for example, what this, as whatever, for whatever reason, it's a good book, I don't care, whatever, it's a lot of money thrown behind it, and the whatever, a lot of media attention, all this other stuff, but as kids read this kind of stuff, it not that I'm against it, my girlfriend reads it, you know, I mean, I'm not totally against
it.
Yeah,
I'm not particularly pro it, but
my idea is that what it is because
I'm not madly anti it, but I'm not very pro it. Put it that way. You know,
right.
Sort of.
Well, from my perspective, I know for a fact, and the people that I've interviewed and the stuff that I know about things like alien abductions and sleep paralysis, there's a direct connection to people dabbling in the occult. There's a natural tendency for people that want some control over the uncontrollable, i.e., you know, I if I get sick or my mom gets sick or this, all the things that can happen in the world, they want control over. If they've abandoned any idea that praying or God can help them, then they must turn by their human nature to something that can give them control. Mm-hmm. Now, the Harry Potter books plants the seed that, hey, you know, I'd like to learn a little bit of magic, puts a really nice face on it. But by doing that, the devil works by authority. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to say, hey, devil, work with me, do with me what you will. You just have to. That's the reason that the occult was forbidden, not because God's a big meanie and was like, hey, don't do that. He was saying that gives the devil his foothold to use you as his thing. Okay, and there's a little, preaching's done. But
yeah.
I think that's part of the empire growing. It's actually the people that he has authority to use is growing in a sense. And so besides all the other infrastructure and stuff, we're dealing with a enemy that is... unbeatable in a lot of ways.
My personal take is that the material world really is the satanic system in itself. That this has been something that is broken away from the true light. You know, from God overall. And the assertion that the Cathars made, and that before they were wiped out in their hundreds of thousands by the Vatican system, that the God of the material world was the evil one, was Satan, that the, I mean, they personally didn't believe in the Old Testament, and not that they acted in reverse of the Ten Commandments, unlike the Franco-Sabbateans, who were far more what I'd perceive as evil intent. But the that was their take on things, and there was a couple of things that I read recently on the internet. I can't remember the names of them, or able to give you the site at the moment. But I presume that the information must have come from some kind of esoteric based source or whatever. But this was going into in far greater detail, but basically sort of tied in with a very similar notion to that which the Cathars believed. And that the tying in with the whole possibility of what may or may not be happening with the 2012 phenomenon, that there is a body of thought that suggests that there's going to be almost like a dissolution, a dissolving of the between the material and the immaterial, between the physical and the non-physical, between the natural and the supernatural, you know, between all of these things, you know, interdimensionality almost becoming one dimension or just a complete wholeness that you'll be able to perceive evil and good from each other. There won't be any hiding from one and as opposed to the other, and this is what the system that controls things fears, and why they're working to implement this change before people wake up. I mean, okay, this is what 5.5 years away. So you know, you'd think, well, they're working to a timeline that there's no way that they can possibly beat. But then again, maybe they're hedging their bets and they're not 100% certain that this is going to happen themselves, or they may be in some kind of form of denial. Nevertheless, that they're hedging their bets and they're not taking any chances, and they're trying to push through the whole microchipping thing to shut down your communication with the infinite, or with God Almighty, or whatever you want to call him or it. Because my own take ever since I was very young, although there were certain times throughout my life when I kind of went away from seeing it in quite this sort of light, was very much in having a connection with God that I felt was direct and that didn't need an intermediary. And I was quite surprised when I was at school to find out from, you know, kids who were like, a friend of mine was Catholic, for example, at school, but I believe, you know, some Protestants, believe this as well, that, that with your prayer, you know, you're always supposed to say, you know, through the Lord Jesus Christ or whatever, he's always got to be your intermediary. I've never felt that need. I even think, well, you know, if it's claimed as, you know, more literal sort of Christians do maintain that the Father and the Son are one, then surely what is the need to have to use these words? Why not just pray to God directly? And you know, if Jesus is no longer in physical form, you know, what is the need to use that name as such? And so that's my own sort of personal take on that sort of connection. But I've always felt having that direct intermediate connection, you also don't need to have these secret society systems, these esoteric, occultic, kabbalistic systems, of which you get initiated into, you know, more and more arcane levels of knowledge in order to reach what they believe is their, you know, true spiritual path, where they become gods in themselves. You know, this notion referred to as the Luciferian philosophy, that William Cooper elucidates quite well, and in these video clips that are available on Google Video called the Lansing Lectures, but many other researchers into the whole Masonic, or at least the upper Illuminist levels of it, break down this whole notion of the Luciferian philosophy in about it really being that they are atheistic, that being a hardcore Satanist or Luciferian is an atheistic system, that they might be communicating with demons as such, but they don't, from what I can tell, believe in a Satan or a Lucifer. And usually when you do hear people talking about a one single entity as being Satan or Lucifer, it tends to be either Catholics or Protestant Christians. Whereas my personal assertion is that the whole material world is you could call Satan, and adhering to the system of control that has been put in place is the satanic system. I mean, it's very, very hard to buck that system, because it means you've got to sort of basically not actively seek promotion within that satanic system. You know, a system that sort of usually sort of ends up more and more with this sort of fascistic overt political system that they're putting in place. You can see it in place in the workplace, where you get people, once they're promoted to a management level, just looking for ways, devising ways of sacking people. You know, this whole thing of just sort of treating people in a cattle-like kind of manner. And you think, well, you know, would I even want to be in that kind of situation? So by not taking a lot of the fruits of the material world, you know, most people sort of buy into what I view as a satanic Luciferian system. And, you know, if you don't want to have to pay the cost in order to do that, then, you know, there's lots of things that you will be, that you will not reap, you will not get. But the choice isn't down to the individual at the end of the day. And I think the more people who are unwilling to go whole hog into that system, then the less chance it will have of being able to fully manifest into its completedness that they're working towards. So yeah, that's my sort of take on that.
Well, yeah, I think that that as far as the Luciferian with a small L philosophy, I think it's in a I can't say for sure because of my definitions and semantics and all, but it's in effect humanism and the do without what thou wilt in a way, and you are God. And that's not necessarily wrong or anything else, but if you look at like the Buddhists, who I think have a clearer perspective of that, in that they have more truth in the fact that they understand that humility, or the bucking of one's ego, and is the way to enlightenment. And I think that is why you can have a follower. Although the Buddhists kind of threw out any morality, and they were more or less college kids, you know, having a, you know, I mean, they just had figured that out, yet were very
the Buddhists and sort of, you know, the ancient, like, East, you mean?
Right. I mean, I may, you correct me if I'm wrong of my interpretation. I could be wrong, am I?
Were they college students?
No, well, I mean, that's how I envisioned them. I they were kind of, you know, the way I read about them, it was just kind of a party atmosphere. Not that that's anything wrong with a party atmosphere, but, you know, there was a lot of things were, you know, morality wasn't a big part of it, as it was just denying of one's ego.
I don't know. I mean, I think different people kind of went into it for different reasons, and still do. I know that there's different branches of Buddhism, and some are very, very austere in a way that, you know, is definitely the polar opposite of hedonistic. But by the same token, it's very much about mind control.
I agree with them in the sense of, I mean, I think that the way to enlightenment, in effect, is humility. I think that without it, that you can't really achieve enlightenment. So I think that the reason that some of that stuff works, the reason I compared it to that and Luciferian with a L is that I think that in a sense they have they, you know, if we're going to go that route, I think it should. I don't know. I think that without one or the other, both are doomed to have too many problems to be able to
balance as well. I mean, the whole thing, you know, I can't buy into the whole thing of turning the other cheek. You know, I think there's like a later interpolation. I think there's quite a few things and it's probably not going to win me any favours with a lot of the more literal-minded Christians. But the whole turn the other cheek thing has been like a Roman system that they love. I mean, this is absolutely...
That was the answer, in effect, to the eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, where a lot of people say is a Christian. They'll quote Christians as saying, well, don't you believe in eye for an eye and tooth for tooth? When, in fact, Jesus was saying, when presented with that argument, although, you know, there was an Old Testament situation, it was like, no, you know, that
Jesus is, if he actually, you know, literally, carnally, historically existed, as presented within the Gospels, his followers they were armed. It was Simon Peter, wasn't it, who sliced off the ear of a Roman guard? So this humility or humbleness, I think this very selective reading of both the New and the Old Testament.
Well, I don't see that, how that, arms
no, not,
and
not
humility
by you,
are...
not by you, but by like a lot of people promoting organized religion in ways that are going to question their authority tend to get pretty short sort of amount of light shone on them, and conversely, ones that will, chapters and verse that will reinforce their authority.
I think that it is easy to misinterpret my criticisms of philosophies as, well, there's this kind of a politically correct idea that floats around now that all religions are right, and that if you believe that you have to believe that all religions are right, when by definition they can't be all right. There is a right and a wrong, and I'm not saying I have it, but let's just get real here. I mean, there was a way that this happened, and it did happen a certain way. Whichever way, somebody's got the answer if indeed anybody does have it. You know, there's not this idea that everything should be, that everybody is right. Yeah. You're entitled to your own opinion. Hell, you're entitled to your own opinion. But
people should really research the Temple of Understanding. Which was it's an organization, but they were looking, but they'd actually designed a Temple of Understanding, which looks like it still hasn't been built yet, but which they were planning to build in the mid-60s. And there was a relation of President Roosevelt, a female relation, I think it might have been Edith perhaps, who wrote an article exposing and researching the occultic ties of this Temple of Understanding, who are looking to bring this sort of theosophical notion of a syncretic, synthetic, one-world religion into place, which, as we know, sort of ties in with the whole notion of the one-world government thing. This was documented quite well in this booklet, I guess you could call it, small book called The Cult of the All-Seeing Eye from 1964. And that was one of the sections in it. Another section was focusing on the United Nations Temple Room and on the Great Seal of America, the United States of America, that was put on the dollar bill in 1935, 2 years after what Congressman James Traficant said was the bankruptcy of America when it was taken over by the international bankers in 1933, the year that FDR and Hitler came to power. And that this it was his vice president, Henry Wallace, I think his name was, who at the instruction of I told someone the other day it was Gurdjieff, it was Nicholas Roerich, a Russian mystic who I think was associated with Madame Blavatsky, the founder of the whole Theosophical Society, which gave birth to the later New Age movement, Nicholas Roerich, he instructed Henry Wallace, who was a high-level Mason, to put the Great Seal of America on the United States of America, which had been designed in the late 18th century by Illuminist Masons involved in American government in the first place, as a sign that the United States of America economically, politically, was now in the hands of the Illuminati. And, of course, the Illuminati, the Bavarian historical Illuminati of the late 18th century, their symbol was an eye within a triangle. And, of course, it's at the peak of the pyramid on the Great Seal. It was also at the peak of the triangle or one side of a pyramid on the MI5's logo that they changed recently. But on the logo that it had for years, that had at the peak of it the triangle within the eye. So that was a triangle within an eye at the peak of another triangle or a pyramid. So MI5, the Masonic elements that they've run throughout the history of the United States government, and the Bavarian Illuminati. You know, it, I mean, what more evidence do the people need? You know, it's no coincidence, folks.
You might be interested in my take, my recent understanding of what the all-seeing eye and the pyramid symbol has to do with. Just for, just to know it, I guess, to what I think of it. I think that what they're doing, and I think part of the capstone replacing the planned capstone in Zahi Hawass and the Council of the Supreme, or, you know, Supreme Council of Antiquities or whatever over there.
Right,
it was effectively shut it down to the public and, you know, built a huge wall around it. And they're doing something very, very special there. A lot of people have postulated a lot of different conspiratorial things, It's quite obvious that the people that we know about are venerate it highly, and in fact, it could be said that it's what they venerate highly.
People we know about are venerated highly. Which people?
I don't know.
The Illuminati and the core, or whatever.
Yeah, there we go. I think that what it is, and this is just, take it or leave it, is I think that there's a lot of evidence to suggest that they are trying to figure out a technology about the pyramids. There's a lot of books written about it. I don't really subscribe totally to any of them about this, but they're trying to, this is my recent thought, that they're trying to open up the abyss that we talked about earlier, and the abyss it appears to me through my research, and again we take different paths in the research, but it appears to me that Satan is kind of working through people at this point, high level demonic agencies, but he himself is not necessarily let free to do his thing right now. And I think that through his agents, they've been figuring out a technology that is not theirs to figure out. And I think Arizona Wilder mentions this or alludes to it, where she says that a lot of the stuff that they do blows up in their face because it's not of their nature. They're trying to figure out. Anyway, there's a lot of stuff about the Baghdad Museum heist and all these things that makes me suggest that they're trying to do something. But I think that putting the capstone on the pyramid or any number of other things, maybe at the right time, in the right place.
Yeah, they tried to do that, didn't they, on New Year's Eve 2000?
But I think
too many protests.
And I think that there will be something, and I think that the reason that the all-seeing eye, and the capstone and everything, I think that has very something. I haven't quite figured it out. This is very new, and there's also another long path I could go down about this and why I think it, but in essence, I think that it will open up the geographical pit that starts, that releases who I'm talking about, and that I think will eventually embody the phoenix as they...
The all-seeing eye is the symbol of illumination. I mean, you can, people call it the eye of Horus, the eye of Osiris, the eye of Set, the eye of Satan, whatever you want to call it. But it really, it is the eye of illumination. Illumination. On their terms, it is their symbol. It is the symbol of the power elite.
But they've already figured it out. I mean, they're not trying to research and dig under whatever. If they own the Vatican Library, they already know it. What are they looking for? If they're not on a quest for illumination, if they've already have it, So let's say that they don't venerate illumination. They couldn't give a shit about it because they already have it. I mean, they're on. I mean, it should be telling as hell that we know that.
They need to perpetuate this system. It's not like a system that once they've got it, that's it. They've got new generations that come through. I think that they realise that they're fighting a spiritual battle, and if you're fighting a battle, you've got to keep at it. That you can't rest, or else, your ends will not be achieved. So that's the reason for why the symbolism and the symbology is propagated.
Whatever it is that they know, whatever it is that they're sitting on, that they're passing down through a system that keeps it secret and everything else, whatever it is that they're sitting on drives them to do something. Once you know what is in the Vatican vaults, and once you've read every damn book on there and you've categorized it and do decimal system and the whole nine yards, and you know what's in there, then then what, you know, why do they need, why do they feel the need to perpetuate it? Is it because it's in effect calling them to do something?
It won't perpetuate itself. Like any organized philosophical control structure of society, you know, it requires the body of knowledge to be passed on and propagated, and the priesthood, if you will, to maintain its power via the control of this knowledge, and letting bits out only at certain points of time to certain people when it's deemed efficacious.
So, well, I mean, well, I think we're kind of going to be at a stopping point as far as this particular subject goes. But would you say then that to know the gnosis, to know what indeed makes it illumination, is the same thing as now needing to perpetuate it? To know it is to want to perpetuate it.
To know is to want to perpetuate it.
I mean, like, what I'm saying is, it is the act of knowing, once you find out what it exactly is, it has to be in my thinking anyway, the one and the same equal sign to wanting to continue it. If we're saying that the only reason that they are having the secret societies to perpetuate it is because it won't perpetuate itself.
I mean, like, once they've been indoctrinated into it, they obviously enjoy the fruits, which they reap from participation, and you know that in itself is the motivation needed. Now, I don't think that using the word gnosis, okay, yeah, sure, it is applicable, but I think there is other forms of gnosis which are a pure, unmediated communication with God Almighty or with the infiniteness of all that is gnosis in itself. And I think this can be achieved in different ways, you know, prayer or meditation, which can view as different forms of each other. And even these psychedelic plants that are given upon the earth, they're not put there purely for reasons of evil. I think they're put there to be used. I think it is possible for people to take these and achieve a very pure state of communication with the infinite.
Yeah. I've done my share of hallucinogens. I've done them all, you know, at one time or another. And I think that what you're saying there is true, because what do people? Let's take Bill Hicks for example. You know, a very common ending of his thing was that, you know, hallucinogens let's say LSD will bring you to a point where you realize that everything is in fact God. I mean, that every in between every atom is God. Everything is God. You can't be separated from something that you are inherently a part of. This is something that is given to us that's something that you realize when your quote unquote third eye is opened. Okay, that's one of the main themes. I mean, would you agree? I mean, that is something that is a thematic in the course of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think to break it down, I mean, the thing that I sometimes kind of forget myself is that ultimately this whole Satan system, you know, false enlightenment Luciferian system, is actually the product of our own fear. And I mean, this is something that I think David Icke illustrated quite well and his explanation of it, and it makes a hell of a lot of sense that once we've allowed ourselves to be intimidated by our own fear, and once you understand this holographic concept of the deeper conscious or subconscious mind projecting waveforms that are the result of what's been programmed into the mind or the spirit via the five senses. Once it projects out these waveforms that we then decode as five sense material reality, that we project either our own prison or our own paradise. And that fear actually has a survival instinct of its own and turns against us. And develops more and more into this kind of prison system that, that is designed to generate ever-increasing levels of fear. And what we've got to realise is to drop the fear, which is not the same as not being aware, because people go, oh, well, yes, you just go around being completely hippy-dippy new agey or whatever. But no, it's not about that. It's about having balance, but not letting ignorance, because it's ignorance that creates fear. It's not awareness. So once you're aware, okay, you can realise what an almost overwhelming challenge that you face, because so very few people are aware. But it's the only reason really to go on doing anything. You know, I don't think life was meant to be without its challenges. I think that's the greatest challenge that faces us at the moment, is becoming sufficiently aware that we can dispel our fear, and that means becoming aware on many, many different levels, and that in itself is what I'd say is the key.
Agreed. I mean, I don't think that our two philosophies are mutually exclusive at all. I think that they tend to be told that they are, and I think that a lot of that, my contention for so long is that the Vatican has done more for, you know, it's a control mechanism, of course, but a control mechanism to control your perceptions of Christianity. Mm. And of course it's a wolf in sheep's clothing, and it shows that clothing.
It controls both sides, though. It controls, it's like in politics you have like this false left and false right, you know, between, you know, conservative and liberal, or extreme fascism and communism, you know, with the same people funding different people of different political persuasions at the top. You know, at the end of the day, none of them are talking about getting rid of the economic system that steals all the income tax for people in order to generate. Or in order to pay for this interest that it generates for the money that it creates for the governments that who should actually be making the money themselves, but like you've also got this kind of like left and right within spirituality, religion, or whatever, where you know within your far right, I guess you'd say it's like the Catholic Church, and within your far left you've got the esoteric occultism. But as we know, it's like a circle that meets up. In the centre of that circle, you've got that Vatican Jesuit system.
I see you're going. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the Ordo Templi Orientis, for example, they've got like a kind of an alternate organisation, which is called the Gnostic Catholic Church, or Ecclesia Gnostica Catholica. I mean, you can Wikipedia that one, and it's got plenty of links to all different sorts of things. In fact, you know, if you click onto some of these entries, I mean, a lot of these organisations got their own websites. You can go onto those websites, and then you can click on various links there to people who've been higher members of that giving speeches, or you can go onto a place like Wikipedia and click onto you know, various speeches and writings of the people involved in these organisations, and it's quite clear from reading these that that the Gnostic Catholic Church, at its head, is the Pope, and so there's no difference between who controls the Roman Catholic Church and the Gnostic Catholic Church, which is the ecclesiastical arm of the Ordo Templi Orientis, the OTO. I mean, as it says here, EGC, the Ecclesia Gnostica Catholica, or Gnostic Catholic Church, is an international fraternal initiatory organisation devoted to promulgating the law of Thelema. Thelema is a philosophy of life first described by Francois Rabelais and later revived and elaborated by Aleister Crowley, who took Thelema as the name of the philosophical, mystical and religious system which he developed based on the Book of the Law, which that quote that you mentioned earlier, do what thou wilt should be the whole of the law, comes from. The word Catholic denotes the universality of the doctrine, not a Christian or Roman Catholic belief set. And indeed, they don't believe the same thing. They believe in a far more metaphorical interpretation of the Bible. I mean, as I do to an extent, but I don't believe in this hierarchical system. Again, I think it's a false path, you know, dividing any of ourselves from the infinite. from God Almighty, as you might say. But yeah, this system at the top is all controlled by the same system, and these are just false options. Anything that's got such a rigidly defined hierarchy, you know, it's like the warning sign. It's the red flag. You know, beware. That's my take on it. You know, and I think it's backed up by the evidence, the research that anyone can do for themselves if they've got access to the internet.
Just so I clear up this one thing, I don't know. I feel it's my duty here. When you say, you know, that there's this there's this mediator, obviously coming from the passage that, you know, no man should come to the Father except through me, and that you don't see the connection there because you can connect with
I think it's an interpolated line.
Right, you know, and I think you're, what Christians tell you, and if a Christian tells you that God's not going to listen to your prayers unless you say, I say this in Jesus' name, then they're wrong, and they have been, when you speak of the Trinity, he's just telling you the facts. He's telling you that, I mean, it's to say that, you know, God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit are literally the same thing. I mean, what lives inside of you is simultaneously all three. When he says, you shan't come to the Father except through me, no man should, I mean, that's because he's talking about the way that it is. I mean, if you pray to God, you're praying to him. It's not that you have to pray in Jesus' name. I will say, however, that if you really want to see the power of it, of the name of Jesus, and that it actually, that he is real, you'll see it when you are confronted with evil, because evil, you are given authority over evil. I mean, look at the 250 abduction cases with Joe Jordan and AACCOA.org and, you know, all this other stuff. I mean, the documentation of people, you know, driving out demons, the power of not Buddha, and they've never mentioned any other source except the name of Jesus. Anyway, that's a little evangelism. I'm sorry for that. But I do want to clear up on that one point. And let's see here. I guess I lost my point in the evangelistic fervor that I had there. All right. What were you going on there, Troy? What were you talking about?
Well, I was just talking about, the whole thing of not just confusing the Vatican with the Catholic Church, tying up at the top level with the Vatican, the Pope, and to the upper levels of the Jesuits, the fourth bow Jesuits.
And let me say this before I think it's important to note that, and this is something that a lot of people will have problems with unless they see how widespread the multiple personality disorder satanic ritual abuse is. I think that just about every church in America has in it somebody that has that is there a knowing Satanist
I think most of that tele evangelist kind of type movement, the Jesus Camp sort of movie, that folks
oh, yeah.
I would say that,
you know, I haven't told anybody on the show
that is Satanist, in my opinion.
I haven't told anybody on the show this ever before in this time, but I used to actually live at TBN, I lived inside the walls next to Paul and Jan Crouch, not for any like actual reason, but my mom at the time was the manager of the gift shop, and so we got to live for like just a little bit of time at the there was Conway Twitty, he's a big country star. Hendersonville, Tennessee, which is like, you know, right next to the town I'm in right now. Johnny mm-hmm. Cash's hometown, the whole thing. Anyway, so I lived there. I was their neighbor. I mean, I saw the whole thing. My cousin was like the bodyguard for Paul Crouch and stuff. I knew then that there was something real wrong going on with that. And that there wasn't, there was something far, far weirder than just, I wasn't awake to a lot of issues then, but, you know, I knew it then. But the thing is, I mean, you can look at the numbers for satanic ritual abuse at 93. These are just the numbers that people go to their psychiatrist and say, yeah, when I was a kid, I was raped in these satanic circles. Everybody was wearing masks. They were sacrificing blood. I had to do all this, you know, all this stuff. You know, there's like 3 million people in 93 that had gone to their psychiatrist and said that in America.
Of course, they always use the argument of false memory syndrome, don't they?
Of course, and all of them are multiples, but we don't understand. Until we can understand and really grasp the fact of that their need for total control has made this new Nazi system of the trauma-based mind control in and they're using the occult power of the Nazis to attach the demons, which gives them further control. They can break the personality down to multiple personalities, but not be able to attach the demons until you give them your will. I mean, that's why they're creating the personalities in the first place. I've interviewed. Anyway, I know, my point is that that I think that it's so widespread. I mean, I know somebody. I won't go into that, but I mean, it's the satanic ritual of abuse is a smoking gun, and until we figure out how widespread and how it's connected to multiple personality disorder, and all those people are the people running the show, and how they are the head of your youth group, and your pastor, and your choir leader, and that they are all plants, whether they know it or not in a lot of cases. Some of them do, some of them don't, but there is, to be indwelt with the power of Satan is just as real and powerful as anything else. I mean, you and he does just like he does with the Illuminati system. They gives them all this the option of so much wealth and power, or the option of like absolute exposure. And you know, the choice is so obvious that of course they make the choice. But it, in effect, is still their choice, even though they have multiple personalities and the different personalities. And that's why some of the personalities are demonized and therefore have more power. Like I interviewed a guy who, you know, a lot of assassins and so on have superhuman strength, but only when they're triggered, only when that with personality comes out, and they can feel that personality talking to them. It's the Nazi system of, that's why the Nazi mind control system was so interwoven with the Blavatsky thing, and it's not just fake. It's not just something that they like to do and go to church about. This is real indwelling power.
I mean, from my own sort of personal observation, I mean, like I remember a long-time friend of mine, actually. I mean, I don't really even communicate with him anymore. I haven't done for the past few years. But like his mother, she was into one of these kind of, I don't know, you know, that whole sort of, well, I kind of call it evangelical sort of church thing. I don't know, you know, what's the whole new kind of wave of so-called churches called? What do you call them?
I don't know.
Not traditional Protestant type churches.
Speaking
in tongues and all of that.
Oh, yeah. I can't think of the word now, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Pentecostal, there you go.
Yeah, so, okay, the Pentecostal thing. Anyway, like, you know, his mother was sort of like part of this, but I noticed that she was also part of this pyramid selling scheme thing called AMCO. And that must have been an abbreviation for American Company or something like that, I guess. But anyway, I remember when I was a teenager sort of thinking, man, this sort of supposed church that she belongs to, you know, and I wasn't, I'd kind of like, you know, wasn't quite so much interested in religion at that particular time. I had been when I was a lot younger, and, you know, I've kind of like redeveloped sort of an interest in knowing about it since. But the, I remember observing, you know, that the fact that it almost seemed like a front for the sort of corporate kind of thing. You know, I wasn't so much thinking about, oh, there's some sort of a cult element to it, whatever, but it didn't kind of seem to vibe right with my whole sort of take on what Christianity should be, and it just seemed like a real, well, I probably did actually think it does seem more like a satanic kind of thing, and also like in more recent times, one of my cousins and indeed his parents, I think both of them, but definitely his mother especially, become involved in one of these kind of, you know, Pentecostal churches or whatever. Just very, very strange. Again, everyone he works with is all part of this sort of thing. And it's, I guess that's part of it is kind of like a form of mind control. It's like sort of separating you away from, you know, anyone who's got much of a different kind of influence or a different take on things to yourself. And I don't know if it's, you know, connected or not, but I mean, his mother had totally, you know, who was involved with this thing, has kind of totally lost her mind over the past few years, sadly. Very, very, very strange manifestation in organized religion.
And it's serving to be the cannon fodder for a lot of the anti-apologists, I guess, that always say something to the effect of, well, look at the fruits of, you know, Christianity, look what it's done, you know, referring in most cases to the Catholic Church or something. And look at these people that TBN, look at this, look at all this stuff nobody wants that because it's intended to be that, you know. Nobody made a mistake. This isn't a mistake. The whole
social engineering thing that's gone over the past 100 or so years, especially since the advent of television, you know, it's definitely been designed to break down Protestantism, you know.
And you know, and quite, another
quite,
thing
quite,
is
quite,
that
quite clear, and this has been hand in hand with you know, not just the Vatican, but certain Zionist Jews as well. You know, anti-religious Jews, non-Jewish Jews, the right. anti-Jewish Jews. Anton LaVey, for example, he set up the Church of Satan. You know, that was his background.
Yeah, I'm not sure he wasn't controlled to some extent. And
no,
that
exactly.
Too.
Exactly.
And what do you think of Crowley? I mean, just I know there's a big major league connection with Crowley here. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, Crowley, he obviously had his links with British intelligence during World War II. British intelligence being set up by John Dee, who was, you know, one of Britain's most famous occultists during the reign of Elizabeth I, I believe. But, I mean, Crowley, obviously, hugely influential, you know, by the OTO, the Ordo Templi Orientis, and the Order of the Golden Dawn. And his writings, quite clearly, very popular even to this day. Like 777 and other Kabbalistic writings and the Book of the Law, things like that. So, I mean, like, Crowley was definitely a high-level Illuminist.
Okay. Well, Troy, I don't know. You got anything you wanted to hit that we didn't hit?
There's a couple of things, actually. There's something that I posted out as a bulletin just a little bit earlier, which I've kind of like sort of subtitled within the bulletin itself, High-Level Russian Economic Researcher Alludes to International Mystical Religious Political Economic Force Intent on Smashing America. And this is actually it's from the internet, from a website called Newsmax from 2001, September 2001, in fact. It came out 6 days after 9/11. And it's quoting from Pravda's website, but as another researcher on the website has pointed out, Pravda's English site, the article doesn't seem to be on there, but it seems to be quite hard to find any English articles on the English Pravda website as far as archives go. But anyway, it's the article on Newsmax is titled "Expert: Russia Knew in Advance Encouraged Citizens to Cash Out Dollars" by Dr. Alexander Nemets, Monday, September 17, 2001. And this has got like an excerpt from an interview with this woman who is like a high-level Russian government economic researcher and part of Putin's advisory circle, supposedly anyway. And I just wanted to read out to you this little toing and froing between an interviewer from Pravda and herself. It's very, very interesting, tying in with 9/11 and what we'd refer to as the Illuminati. Her name's Koyajina, that's her last name anyway. She says, "The US is engaged in a mortal economic game. The known history of civilization is merely the visible part of the iceberg. There is a shadow economy, shadow politics, and also a shadow history known to conspirologists. There are unseen forces acting in the world, unstoppable for most powerful countries and even continents." And then Pravda paper said, or website said to her, "Just these forces intend to smash America on..." Oh, this interview was actually from before 9/11. She gave this date of August 19, 2001. So Pravda's asking her this. I think she was interviewed in about July, something like that. And she says, "There are international super state and super government groups. In accordance with tradition, the mystical and religious components play extremely important roles in human history. One must take into account the shadow economy, shadow politics, and the religious component while predicting the development of the present financial situation. Pravda, still I don't understand what could be done to this giant country, the US, whose budget is calculated in the trillions of dollars. Koyajina, it is possible to do anything to the US, whose total debt has reached $26 trillion. Generally, the Western economy is at the boiling point now. Shadow financial activities of $300 trillion are hanging over the planet. At any moment, they could fall on any stock exchange and cause panic and crash. The recent crisis in Southeast Asia, which touched Russia, was a rehearsal. Pravda, what is the sense of smashing just America? call Eugenia. The US has been chosen as the object of financial attack because the financial center of the planet is located there. The effect will be maximal. The strike waves of economic crisis will spread over the planet instantly and will remind us of the blast of a huge nuclear bomb. Pravda, did Russia's crisis of 1998 have this religious mystical component? Call Eugenia. The Russian crisis of 1998 was preconditioned by internal factors. Yeltsin's policy enlarged its consequences. In the rest of the bulletin that I'll put out, it gave a little bit of context to who this woman was and the article that she was being interviewed where she talked about this imminent attack on America and about this shadow political economic super state, super government, as she referred to it, who had this mystical and religious aspect to it, and you thought, well, it's almost like a conspiracy researcher's dictionary definition of the Illuminati.
Right.
And the religious component could only really be the Vatican and the Jesuits, because quite clearly the Zionists aren't religious per se. I thought that was a fascinating
little
interview.
Who dug that up? How did it get found?
How I come across it originally is a funny thing. I'd come across the story and on the internet, and I can't remember where it was, what I'd seen it on. And then I was digging through some of my old emails. So I emailed a lot of articles to myself, or used to in the days before I had a computer. I'd go to the internet cafe, and that would be how I'd store information or whatever. Wouldn't have bookmarks or, you know, any other means of doing that. So I just used to email articles that copied myself. And so I was digging through these old ones a few days ago, and I found this old one off Prison Planet, the Alex Jones and Watson Brothers site. I can't remember what they called their article now, but it had quite a few links. I mean, that's one of the great things. And people do knock them, but I'll tell you what, it's a great means of being able to research stuff for yourself, going on to Prison Planet and InfoWars, because of the sheer number of links that they've got to mainstream sources, all sorts of sources. Anyway, yeah. they had like this link to this Newsmax website, and that website had links to other articles. So I think this was kind of like a link of a link that I'd originally come across via Prison Planet from late last year, from 2006, where the article was referring to the Russian agent Litvinenko and a journalist, female journalist friend of his, a very long name that's hard to pronounce, Anna P something or other, was her name. And then in the lower part of the article, it quoted this this Russian economic researcher who said to have ties with the Putin administration, and called Call Eugenia, and she goes into this whole sort of thing. And very, very fascinating portion of an interview. I only wish that, you know, I'd be able to read the rest of the interview, but from what I can gather from what Newsmax said, she didn't actually kind of go in any deeper on that sort of thing. Because that
sounds like she knew what she was talking about, though. Matter of fact.
It's the closest that I've ever come to sort of like, you know, finding someone in a fairly high governmental position, whether it's sort of like, you know, directly administration linked or not. As a high-level economic researcher anyway, referring to this international mystical religious forces preparing an attack on the U.S. about a couple of months before 9/11.
You know, and of course, I'm sure you know how explosive that is to me, who I'm sure you can infer how I would interpret the religious component that she's talking about, but I think said so matter-of-factly, I don't think it could mean much else that, I mean, you know, than what I obviously could mean that the Vatican was involved, but it sounds like if she knows what she already knows, then she knows that the Vatican is religious, but not in the way that they say. I don't know. Maybe
I think that's where she said mystical and religious.
Oh, she did. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so it kind of links the two, really. The mystical thing, well, you know, that encompasses, you know, as we know, the Jesuits, the Freemasonry, the Knights of Malta.
Right.
The Ordo Templi Orientis, Memphis and Mizram. I mean, the list goes on, you know, to different levels. Obviously, you know, the Knights of Malta are not quite as mystical as, say, the Ordo Templar Orientis or whatever, but that whole network, essentially, tying in with the Vatican Jesuit system.
Anything else?
Let's have a look at my little list of bookmarks I sort of dug up here. Well, that Constantinian order is definitely one that I think you should check out
if
you go to www.constantinianorder.org /English/ you've got all this down tape, so you can always look back at it later. I had a few different kind of pages off there. History was one.
Any
relations
to like the Constantine, or how is it associated, or if not
Constantine,
all it
definitely would be Constantine, the so-called the Great. So the sacred military Constantinian order of Saint George. Okay, so if I go onto one of their pages here, history, a little brief bit about the history. According to its most commonly repeated history, the original institution from which the modern order descends was founded by the Emperor Constantine the Great to provide a guard for the Labarum, or standard, which had been carried at the head of his troops at the Battle of Milvian Bridge in 312 AD.
Could you say that again?
Which bit you want me to start from?
To guard what?
Okay. To provide a guard for the Labarum, or standard, which had been carried at the head of his troops at the Battle of Milvian Bridge in 312 AD. This great victory of the pagan forces of Maxentius, but as we know, you know, Constantine was a worshipper of Sol Invictus up until his death, when he, you know, renounced it so that he could get all the benefits of Christianity. This great victory over the pagan forces of Maxentius led to the conversion of the Roman Empire to Christianity and had a profound effect on European history. It probably seemed appropriate to 16th and 17th century historians that such a momentous event should have been commemorated by the establishment of an order of chivalry. Statutes dating from 16th century state that the original rules were confirmed and amended by the emperors Isaac Angelus and Michael Palaeologus, but the only extant versions of these statutes date from the 16th century. The Constantinian order subsequently received confirmation as a religious military order from the Holy See, which as we know is the Vatican, and with the Order of Malta, the Knights of Malta, is the only international Catholic order which has maintained the status unchanged to the present day. The order is dedicated to the propaganda of the faith, defence of the Church, and support of the Holy See. The members owe a particular duty of loyalty to the Pope and to support the teachings and dogma of the Roman Catholic Church. The Constantinian order is also the only international Catholic order with a hereditary Grand Mastership. Since 1731, this has been the inheritance of the Bourbon family, descended from Philip V of Spain and his wife Elizabeth Farnese. Although often described as a Neapolitan institution, this is a mistaken view of the order's history. Neapolitan is like from Naples in Italy. Before 1698, its administrative headquarters was based in Venice, the residence of its Grand Masters. That was kind of like the banking headquarters back in those days, kind of like the London of its day, or the Wall Street, all travelled with them. From 1698 until 1768, it was based in Parma, even though the Grand Master himself took up residence in Naples in 1734, da-da-da-da. It just goes on about the sort of, tillings and froings of it moving from one place to another and various Grand Masters, etc., etc. So that's the basic history. Now, if we click on some of the other pages, let's go on to relations with the Holy See. It says, please refer to the history of the order for the record of papal bulls and briefs granting privileges to the order prior to 1922. In the 20th century, Pope St. Pius X and Pope Benedict XV both granted privileges to the order, while Pius XII was himself a member of the order. And it's got various pictures of various European royalty who are holding the Pope's hand, etc., etc. Go back onto some of the other bits and pieces. Legal status of the Constantinian order. The order exists as an institution pleno jure, founded as a subject of canon law with the ecclesiastical office of Grand Master hereditary in the Royal House of Bourbon. Authorization to wear the order has been given to Spanish, Italian, Mexican, United States and Brazilian citizens by the competent authorities of those states. click on another link within it. AIMS, okay, that's an interesting one. The Sacred Military Institution, the Sacred Military Constantinian Order of St. George is an order of chivalry which from its earliest origins has supported the glorification of the cross, the propaganda of the faith, and the defense of the Holy Roman Church. Its special legacy through service in the Orient, fighting the infidel, and the many proofs of the recognition and regard of the Supreme Pontiffs, which as we know is the Pope. It is not only required that the knights should lead the lives of perfect Christians, supposedly, but that they must participate in every manifestation which contributes to the development of the principles of religion among people and cooperate with all who revive the practice of Christianity. The order, to strengthen its secular institutions, must be willing to adapt to the exigencies of the times, which, while evolving, have transformed the structure of modern society, and must dedicate itself to the two greatest and most important social works, hospital assistance and charity. And as we know, with some of those other organisations like the Red Cross, I've got the symbol of the Knights Templar, and the St. John Ambulance people have got the Maltese Cross, which is the other branch of the Knights of Malta, the Knights of St. John. And then looking at some of their new appointments and promotions from 2005 to July 2007. Appointment to Knight Grand Cross of Justice of Honour is His Royal Highness Prince Franz Wilhelm of Prussia. According to governmental maps, Prussia doesn't even exist anymore. And yet, I think they're planning for the new Holy Roman Empire to come out of the European Union, and that they very much do still have these subsections in mind that they. It does seem like they have plans to revive, but you've got members of various European royal families, whether it's the Bourbons or the Hohenzollerns, and the various other ones, and they're being members of this organisation. Click on the one saying membership. Give me a bit better. Yeah, so you've got sort of like Dukes of Bourbon, Juan Carlos of Bourbon, different princes, relating to Austria and that, which I guess is the Habsburgs. Here we've got SAS, Principe Johann George de Hohenzollern, etc. So yeah, we've got the ripe old bunch of the European Illuminati aristocracy in there, many of whom are members of other orders like the Knights of Malta.
Can you go to some of those like websites like Knights of Malta and just go to membership? And I know a lot of people talk about like David Icke's always referring to somebody.
Icke loosely sort of touches on the Knights of Malta, but from what I can tell, his research is based around the guys who did the Holy Blood, Holy Grail book, one of their subsequent books. I can't remember which one it is now, the Messiah Legacy or the one that came after that. I can't remember the name of. But the guy who touches on the Knights of Malta stuff the most in depth is Eric John Phelps, and definitely in terms of modern day Knights of Malta and various Knights of Malta throughout the 20th century, and their links to the upper levels of the international intelligence networks. That this is something that Leo Zagami confirms and goes into in different directions as well. What it seems is that the Vatican uses the Knights of Malta as its intermediaries between themselves and things like the International Intelligence Network, and probably even with the International Crime Network, via people like, in the States, the Archbishop of New York, I mean, I think it's an Archbishop of Chicago and one or two others, but the Archbishop of New York, from what I can tell, is who George W. Bush would answer to. And that the actual seat of governmental power is Georgetown University, the home of the Jesuits, very, very close to Washington DC actually. Another thing you might find interesting from, this is something I kind of just deduced from, various researchers is the whole thing about the District of Columbia. Now, this goddess Columbia,
right.
the symbol in Columbia Pictures, etc. And Freeman goes on some of his shows quite a bit about it. But Columbia is like the word Columba in French. It means the dove, and the dove is a symbol of Semiramis, who's said to be the wife of Ninus, which is the Latin name for Nimrod. So this female goddess archetype, which has its parallels with Isis and with both Mary Magdalene and the Virgin Mary, which I see is at least within, say, Catholicism, as being two different kind of aspects that have analogies with Isis and Semiramis. That if you take Virgin Mary and you look at the fact that Washington D.C. is surrounded by Virginia and Maryland on one side and on the other, Virginia, Maryland, it's like Virgin Maryland, isn't it? And right in the heart of Virgin Maryland, you've got the District of Columbia, their goddess, and you've, of course you've got Mariolatry, the worship of Mary throughout Catholicism, so this worship of the goddess, which equates totally with Columbia, from the information I've come across, the District of Columbia, what was on the lands and deeds papers before it was called Washington, D.C., was called Rome. So, it seems to be a very, very long history of this whole thing, and it's like word games, it's numerology, it's astrotheology, it's, creating below, what they see above, whether that's on a physical or a metaphysical level.
Speaking of that, have you, as that maxim goes, have you looked into, made me think of it when you're talking about D.C., but have you looked into David Flynn's view on that issue, the maximum, and how it relates to Ouroboros and the whole situation? It's a breakdown of basically what, a Freeman does, but from a different perspective, and I feel do you know of David Flynn?
No, I don't.
Oh, my goodness. Google David Flynn video.
FLYWN?
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah. If you like Freeman, you'll love David Flynn. I'm sure you've probably come across his website before. It's MT Squiggly Watcher. It's one of the oldest sites on the internet. It was the site that loosely the X-Files were based around. He's just as far as what I wanted you to check it out for is it. If you kind of understand the as above, so below maxim, and you pretty much got it figured out, but you don't have it locked down of what you think that what symbolism they're doing there. His presentations, PowerPoint presentations, are absolutely mind blowing and necessary watching to really figure out, to really understand it.
I think also a lot of these symbols in that they actually have multiple meanings because they know that it's an interdimensional thing that they're dealing with. So you have more physical, mundane interpretations, and then you have have like a kind of middle ground type one, and then you have the really arcane, mystical, ultra mystical interpretations of the symbols. I mean, because as you know, like a symbol can be used to represent a multitude of things, but to take the common one, very Masonic related. And Luciferian, I guess, ultimately, is that you've got the, with the sun and the obelisk. Now, the sun represents many different things. You've got the sun represents light, which can be seen as illumination. The sun has also got like more direct forms of, worship for the masses of the ancient cultures. But that sun on top of the pyramid with the rays of the sun, one line of research that I come across asserted that that's what that represents in the upper levels of the cultic hierarchy, like in the upper levels of the OTO, for example, they've got to go through sodomistic ritual. Now, this is not a matter of speculation at all. This is, you know, if you look into their own writings, this is referred to, the sodomistic ritual, which they believe is that you've got to have this, one of your high priests perform this on you in order to gain illumination. And so that this sun is actually, you know, as disgusting as it might sound, a representation of the open anus on the physical level. In the same way that you could look as, well, quite clearly, the obelisk is a phallic symbol. So you've got this, you know, this sort of sodomistic element to the upper levels of occultic initiation. That's not to say everyone involved in the occult goes through this. Quite clearly they don't, but not everyone gets up to the high levels either. So that's one level of the symbolism of the obelisk and of the sun. But obviously they have a multitude of other meanings. But
that separates almost the orders themselves. You know, I think some orders just tell their patrons, I don't know, of one of the forms of the explanations or interpretations, rather, of the symbols, and they would be blind in their entire life to the true nature of it, you know.
Yeah.
Or let's not say true nature, but one of the other.
I think they work out, you know, so it's obviously, you know, just observing, you know, those within their ranks and who they deem more suitable. Whoever or who's able to suit their purposes more, that will be brought forth into, you know, a certain level of upper degree or another, and not everyone's going to be deemed suitable for whatever reason, you know. Either think, well, they're going to reject this whole thing and rebel from it and shoot their mouth off or whatever, or that they just don't think that they've got the abilities or the skills in order to carry out what they need them to carry out, but quite clearly, you know, that's the nature of this compartmental, pyramidal, hierarchical, structure, you know, you always got less at the top than you got down below, and you don't need a hell of a lot of people at the top as long as you've got the right people performing the tasks that you need them to perform at the different levels.
So Troy, what, let's see how I want to phrase this. You know, you're living in real life 1984 over there. Do you feel, are you in danger? Are you fearful? What are they arresting dissenters now? Or what is your take on the outlook in your in
well,
your
they sort of like
out?
Changed various things with the sort of protest things. I mean, a few years ago, you know, I used to sort of go on some of these, what they used to call it, it's on May the 1st, you know, which is, you know, it's now. Done a bit of research on the occultic front is an occultic ritualistic day, but it's also the day of the international communism. But they'd have this on May Day, that's what they call it. Yeah, so that there'd be like this sort of like anti-corporate May Day protest or whatever. And I sort of like went along about maybe for about 3 years to these things, and I was always thought, well, who is it that actually, you know, starts the violence or whatever? I think the last one I went to, there was quite a bit of heavily publicised violence anyway, even if there wasn't much of it, and just like seeing people spray paint up and down Whitehall, which is the street that goes in between the Houses of Parliament and goes up to Trafalgar Square, and just off that you've got Downing Street, where the Prime Minister lives. But anyway, you'd see, like, you know, Tony Blair as a wanker or whatever, like spray painted on, you know, the side of some old statue or something. And you think, who could even be bothered? You know, what the fuck is the mentality of somebody who would actually be on one of these things to do that? And that obviously wasn't the violence. The violence was like, you know, the kicking in of, you know, McDonald's shop windows, which I might feel like doing myself, but, you know, it's kind of beneath me. And I'm sure it's, you know, beneath most people. And you think, anyone really sort of here with enough intent to be here for some genuine reason is going to realise that this is completely—it's like pissing in the wind. What is the point? You know. And back then I thought, I'm sure that there's like agent provocateurs, you know, from intelligence within this whole thing, whether it's European intelligence or British intelligence, I don't know. But the and I'm sure that there's agent provocateurs from intelligence within dissident groups, you know, within sort of like, you know, there's like anarchist groups or, you know, left-wing groups, this, that, and the other. And I think the very last one I went on, there was hardly anyone there. I thought, oh, this just seems like a theatre. It seems like a complete and utter charade. I couldn't be dealing with it anymore. I thought it was a complete and utter waste of time. But, yeah, so back in those days, you used to be able to go right past Houses of Parliament and stuff like that. And I think they brought in various laws saying that you can't do this. Like Gordon Brown's recently talking about, you know, stopping these, like removing this ban or whatever, that you'd be able to protest closer to the House of Parliament. But I think they'll bring out, you know, sort of like another bunch of terrorist attacks, that it'll be a complete non-issue or whatever. I mean, there's no point listening to half the things that they say on the news. You know, the prime ministers and various top politicians, because, you know, they're saying whatever they think people want to hear.
So what's your philosophy on, you know, being fearful of them breaking down your door and drugging you?
See what you're saying. It's only when it becomes sort of an impediment to actually being able to get the information out. That's obviously where the concern is, you know, where you could end up with your door being kicked down and you know, your means of access, of putting the communication out there, removed. you know, which the... I mean, there's one of my MySpace friends. Like she had the cops around to her place. For, I don't know what the hell the reason was. There's nothing to do with her, from what I could gather. And then they were just like taking stuff from her house or whatever. And she hasn't had a computer. Well, she obviously has got a computer now, but she hasn't had that one for over a year, and still hasn't been able to get it back. You know. But yeah, that's obviously problematic, because you're better off being, you know, in a situation that's not in the heart of the beast, to be able to criticise the beast when it comes to that sort of stage. But at this point in time, I still see it as being efficacious in terms of personal experience and learning and being able to relay that out there, to be within the heart of the beast, so to speak, or the belly of the beast. But I mean, the other week I was walking home off the bus, because there's a big traffic jam. There's a big football, soccer game, as you might call it, going on. And I saw this motorcycle rider who must have been trying to get through, you know, some cars or whatever, and this cop telling him he couldn't go through, and he got in an argument with the cop or whatever. And then the cop just whips out his sort of retractable truncheon or baton or whatever the hell you want to call it, billy club or whatever you might call it in the States, and just starts beating this guy around the legs while he's sitting on his motorcycle, and then starts hitting his torso. And by this time, five other cops have joined, and they're all standing around the guy yelling at him as he's being beaten. And then a couple of the others get out these kind of retractable clubs or whatever, like made out of, you know, some kind of very hard metal, and start beating the guy with a thing. Of course, like, he starts falling down, you know, this very heavy, large motorcycle, and that, and then the others just start kicking him, and we're all behind these sort of railings, you know, yelling out stuff like, you know, fascist, police state, you know, scum, you know, shame, this, that, and the other. And you know, like, one of them's kind of looking up to see who's yelling out this stuff or whatever, you know, while he's continuing to beat this guy. And it's, you know, it's just like, you know, no call for it. And you think, well, I mean, that was the first time I'd ever seen something like that happen that wasn't in the situation of a riot. Now, you stuff like that in London, you know, I mean, I'd never even seen it on mass protest demonstrations. I had once seen it, and it was like on this protest of Hitler's 100th birthday a long, long time ago. I definitely think something's brewing, you know, and I think as much as anyone else, you know, the police are products of this sort of multiple direction bombardment, whether it's through, you know, the chemicals that we're imbibing into our body or and stuff, making us, you know, more prone to the programming and more sort of pointlessly aggressive towards each other. Mm-hmm. but never focusing on the real source of our downtroddenness as it's becoming more and more. So, it's also the whole thing of, you know, you're born into the world a free person, you know, well, at least I was. But yeah, when you're surrounded by cameras more and more, you know, just everywhere, when they bring in things like the, what they call them, Oyster cards, so that's the transport cards, and they make it just so expensive to spend cash, to travel by cash anymore, like it's about four times the price, you know, so you can't afford it, you know, and so you're forced into using this Oyster card. You know, but what happens when the Oyster card blends up with, you know, when they get rid of cash? They're starting to do now. I heard a news story, you know, about talking about you being able to top up your Oyster card and use it to, you know, buy drinks in the pub. I mean, they haven't introduced it yet. But they're obviously thinking about these things. And they're also talking about introducing these cards, for kids that you top up so they don't have to carry cash around so they're safe. But of course, it'll just lead to one card that, you know, you'll be able to do it on your national ID card when they finally bring that in. And then, of course, well, you know, you don't want to lose your whole life on the card. You better have it on a chip in your arm, you know, and ultimately in your brain. But it's that whole thing of you can just see the micromanagement coming in on every level, the propaganda about the global warming and all of that. You know, seizing on things that, you know, are blatantly happening overall throughout the solar system, but like just focusing on, oh, well, it's, you know, man-made pollution on the Earth. Now, you know, I'm not into pollution, and the air in London can get terrible sometimes, especially during really hot times in the summer, you know, so I don't want pollution either, but, you know, I'm not willing to sort of, you know, be brainwashed into believing that man's pollution is responsible for something that's the responsibility of the sun. It's a natural process, you know, the global warming. But of course, you know, all these things, like I say, it's a multi-level, multi-pronged attack on mankind, basically. And it does, you know, there will probably be some point where I think, man, I've got to get out of here. Because it's not a tolerable way for people to be living a life when, you know, no matter where I would happen to be, I'd still want to be redistributing this information, you know, the information that I come across and that I get from wherever, you know, to be able to help people who might not be able to get out of this situation. But by the same token, you've got to think, well, I've spent sufficient time and energy trying to wake people up. You know, at certain points got to come when you think, you know, people got to do stuff for themselves as well, you know. I don't think any of us really should be the babysitter of the rest of the world. But you know, we're playing our parts. We're helping themselves up. You know, you can't wake people up themselves. You know, you can't force people to wake up. But if you can help them, if you can tell them, hey, wake up. The building's burning down. You got to wake up. You know, then. So it's up to them. The blood's on their hands eventually. But hopefully they will wake up in time. Hopefully we will be able to reverse this whole thing. But we'll only do it through focused intent and action on whatever level we think we're best to do. My own level, I view as best is doing research and redistributing that research. And I think some other people are better out there sort of getting 9/11 awareness groups or whatever. I've been to some of these things, and you know, I can see that even those are being railroaded, and that they want to shut out certain forms of information. And it's not even, you know, some of the, you know, the more esoteric stuff that we're talking about. But yeah, sorry, I've been going on for a while.
No, that's a good closer to the show. I think you're right. I think the people are waking up, and I would encourage you to do the world a favor and get a blog or get a podcast or get a radio show. Hell, I could probably get you on Revere Radio just if you could produce an hour show. I mean, we need you in a sense, because there's a lot of, you know, we need somebody with your talent to that's not controlled, that's willing to look at the information objectively. I think that your take on this is so objective. It's so valuable in a lot of ways. So
thanks for your kind words. I mean, you know, coming from someone, yourself. I respect, you know, your whole dedication to finding out what's really going on and to being able to share with people what you find out. I mean, you're doing sterling service,
I think we need help, and I think that if you want to, like I said, let's go ahead and end the show. Troy, you want to give out your website information and whatever we have to do that right now, and we'll close around now because I got a lot of material to go over here.
Sure, my display name is my first name, which is Troy, T-R-O-Y. And the URL is www.myspace.com/soul_inspiration. That's S-O-U-L underscore symbol inspiration. And that's that. Plenty of links on there to all sorts of documentaries for people to get information, plenty of links on banners to various websites. There's one or two things I would change on there, but MySpace have deemed it that my profile disappears when I try to change anything, so I don't want to take the risk of changing anything at this point in time. So, there's plenty on there for people to get going on, you know, and lots of interesting videos. There's connections to the conspiracy clothes and the interesting times and all of that, and you know, plenty of ways for people to get the research themselves and to start doing their own research and start distributing it themselves. And that's the key. We've just got to keep raising the level of awareness and get people to be able to become sufficiently aware in themselves that they're able to increase their own awareness and just keep the thing going continuously, not stopping.
Absolutely, and I encourage my audience to check you out, and I'll provide links to all of Troy's material on MySpace, on my page, nowheretorun.podomatic.com, where you can look at the show notes, and I'll provide links for all the stuff that we've talked about here today. So, all right, I will talk to you later. This is Revere Radio, and it's a worldwide home of free speech, and I'll talk to you guys next week.